I first got started with Visual Studio, I guess, in 1997. And I was actually working on our web server product, IIS, and classic ASP back then. And we just shipped kind of IIS 4, which was kind of a big release for our web server. And we're kind of trying to figure out what to do next. At that point, we talked a little bit with Visual Studio, but there was kind of a pretty big gap between what kind of the platform teams were doing and what the tools were doing. And for the website, we tried to figure out what was next. And the irony was, originally we thought, wow, there's nothing left to do. Everything's been done. And we spent a lot of time talking to customers and realizing there's a lot more to do. You know, things around deployment, the ability to use languages like VB or strongly typed languages, you know, with the web, thinking about security, deployment, configuration, scalability, performance, and then, you know, how do we create kind of a web programming model that enabled you to use kind of controls or UI components in order to help build sites. And so we quickly realized there was a lot of stuff to do. I was one of about two or three people that kind of started prototyping something that became ASP.NET. And you know, part of kind of how .NET and Visual Studio combined was we sort of, a bunch of us kind of came together and realized, hey, there's something big there and a big opportunity. The internet obviously became big, you know, really starting in the 90s, but I'd say really kind of reached a critical point in the middle 90s where, you know, suddenly it went from being kind of, you know, something that people did on college campuses or kind of more the cutting edge people used to something that, you know, most organizations, most companies, you know, started to just say, we need, you know, take for granted and make part of their daily life. And likewise, on the consumer side, people just sort of started to use the web as an essential part of their lives. And, you know, for us with Visual Studio and especially with .NET, you know, one of the things that we were trying to figure out is, you know, around 96, 97, 98 was this realization that, it sounds trite now, the web is going to be big, but trying to figure out from a developer perspective, you know, how do we make sure that Visual Studio is, you know, the best place to build, you know, rich applications, whether they're line of business based web applications, whether they're websites, or any other type of application out there. And that was some of the genesis behind .NET and Visual Studio .NET, was to basically say we need to kind of radically bring forward you know, our platform as well as our tools to kind of take advantage of this new world. Well, our first web tool for Visual Studio was something called Visual InterDev that kind of shipped, I think, in 1995, and then we did an update in 1997. Or 1996, actually, and it was, I'd say, an early tool, and it had lots of really good characteristics of it. But it, you know, the experience of if you wanted to kind of build web UI, if you wanted to incorporate business logic, if you wanted to go against a database, I'd say it was fairly rough. You know, you could build your web pages using VB script or JavaScript and classic ASP. There are lots of issues in terms of performance, in terms of configuration and deployment. You could, you know, we then said you'd build your business logic in, say, VB through COM, and you could certainly do that, and you could go against your database. And, you know, a couple of the challenges were every time you actually rebuilt your COM objects, you actually had to stop and restart your web server. And so you manually had to reboot your web server on every compile. Which was obviously a pain. Debugging, you know, the debuggers, you couldn't actually set a breakpoint in your web page and then go into VB and actually step into it. And, you know, performance was an issue, and, you know, it was early days. And, you know, the programming model in general didn't really facilitate kind of a very clean way to separate out some of your business logic or your application logic from your HTML. It was kind of all smooshed together. And that was, you know, we kind of realized around 96, 97, it was still very popular because, you know, there was clearly demand for building these types of apps. But it was around that time that we kind of realized, you know, hey, you know, there's maybe an opportunity here for us to go a step beyond and have a much richer tooling experience and really enable you to build kind of applications much easier and much cleaner than people were used to then. At that time, there weren't that many competitors in the tooling space. You know, a lot of people were, you know, frankly, just using text editors and still are today. There definitely were, you know, definitely for us, you know, Java was something that we were kind of worried about. And we, you know, we certainly saw, you know, at the same time that the internet was getting super popular, kind of a rise in interest in the Java programming language. And this whole, you know, this concept of kind of an object-oriented class library. And so the confluence of the web plus interest in Java as both a language as well as an API, and then, you know, also just kind of realizing that, you know, there's an opportunity for us to take our languages and our tools to the next level. That kind of crystallized around 98, or late 97 and early 98, where we sort of said, you know, what if we could do something, you know, that was fairly big and radical, that could kind of bring forward kind of our platform dramatically, and also kind of bring forward our tooling dramatically, and that was really kind of what led to .NET as well as Visual Studio .NET. A lot of people probably assume that .NET started, you know, this grand strategy, you know, carefully thought out and you know, had all planned out, and you know, in many ways .NET started kind of as just a couple of us, you know, trying out ideas. You know, there were two or three teams in particular that kind of came together nicely. You know, one was the ASP.NET team, or what became the ASP.NET team. It was like two or three of us at the time. And, you know, we were kind of prototyping this idea of how to bring forward kind of our web programming model. And so, I kind of over, I think, Christmas 97, you know, between 97 and 98, kind of prototyped the first version of ASP.NET. And it was very simple, and you know, it didn't do everything, and it used COM and JavaScript and C++ and a whole bunch of other things. But you know, you get kind of the fundamentals of building a page, having a component model, having kind of a security architecture and pipeline, and a whole bunch of things. And we kind of evolved that and tried a whole bunch of different things kind of throughout '98. In parallel, the Common Language Runtime team was formed around the same time that ASP.NET was getting started to kind of build kind of a next generation runtime environment. And so it was called the Complus Runtime to begin with. And we were separate from them. We didn't actually even know each other existed, but they were making progress in terms of defining this thing. And then in, at the same time, the tools teams had a couple of compiler teams in VB, as well as a language called Cool that became C#, and were experimenting with kind of new language innovations. And we kind of all came together around 98, where we sort of realized on the ASP.NET side, wow, it'd be really nice to have this object-oriented framework and runtime to build on top of. And the tools guys said, gosh, to do all this language work, we're going to need to have a runtime. And likewise, the tools guys said, wow, you know, if we target this, we can target your web thing. And, well, that would be kind of cool. And, you know, I still remember we used to have these kind of weekly meetings. And it was not a big conference room, and it's actually still in our building, but it was, you know, it was maybe we had 20 people in the conference room that represented different teams, and we just kind of would check in on each other and see what each other were doing. And you know, for the first couple of years, it was just those 20 people. And we just sort of report status. And there's lots of things that you take for granted and you know, today when you program. Like you can talk to the file system, you can do COM interop, you can, you know, you can add two numbers together and get a result. And you know, when you're in the early days like we were with .NET, you know, each of those things was a big milestone when those things finally worked. And so, you know, exceptions was a big deal. You know, COM interop was a huge deal. File.io was a big deal. And so, you know, those were fun times in the sense of it's hard to imagine where we are today versus where we started, just how much we kind of, how much progress we made. I think one of the things for us that was hard to figure out in the first .NET release was to try to figure out sort of how fast would the common language runtime be. You know, this concept of garbage collection in the mid-90s was fairly radical. And, you know, a common assumption back then was, you know, no server could do garbage collection. That was something for client apps, not for server apps. And it was true. And, you know, most Java servers did not scale very well at all. Part of what we tried to figure out with ASP.NET was how much do we write in C++? How much do we try to write in C#? You know, how do we, you know, how much do we bet on this thing called .NET as we build our own thing? And in the end, we actually bet a lot. We've sort of said at the end of the day, customer apps are going to be probably bigger or represent a bigger part of the code running than the actual framework that we're building. And if we can't make customer apps run fast, then if we can't make our own framework run fast, then customer apps aren't going to run fast either. And so we made this big bet to build ASP.NET almost entirely in C# and managed code. And that was very risky in the beginning. And we'd do perf numbers, and we'd have like, you know, 4 or 5 requests per second for Hello World. And you'd think, God, we're never going to be able to ship this thing. And then, you know, each week we'd kind of optimize and optimize and optimize and optimize, and we'd get up to 10 requests a second, and then 20 requests a second, and then 40 requests a second, and then 100 requests a second was a big time. And, you know, eventually we get up to thousands of requests per second. Writing the class libraries and writing things like ASP.NET and C#, from a language perspective, was wonderful. And so, you know, we love the fact that, you know, you could just be so much more productive in a managed language like C# or VB versus, say, C++. And you could you know, really define the object model in a way that was, you know, much, much cleaner than you could with, say, COM or, you know, traditional C++. The big risk was, you know, when you write in managed code, you're running on the CLR. And so the big question was, you know, how good would our code generation be? How good would our garbage collection be? You know, how fast would the code ultimately run? It would look pretty, but how fast would it be to run? And, you know, when you're kind of just starting from the beginning and, you know, just trying to get memory allocation and code execution working, you know, it's a bit of a gamble. You know, you think we can get the performance to a certain level. You don't know if it will. But thankfully, by writing our core class libraries in managed code, we were able to kind of use them to perf tune the heck out of the CLR and get to the point where it turned out to be a huge payoff for us and really worked out well. Originally, we'd looked at J++ as kind of a clean, you know. Then it was kind of based on the Java language, and it was, you know, we liked a lot of the elements of it, you know. And so a lot of us that had started on .NET had some experience with Java, and, you know, looked at the language really as, you know, a much cleaner way to build object-oriented programming than, say, C++. And so, you know, a lot of us that had written C++ in our day jobs here at Microsoft doing COM, having a clean object-oriented language was just a breath of fresh air. You know, at the same time, there were a lot of things that Java didn't do, you know, even today, but especially back then. You know, things like events, things like properties were a little messy. I think the exception, you know, the way exception languages were declared was a little brittle and a little painful. And so there were definitely things around the Java language also that weren't perfect, but there was enough positives that we said, oh, you know, that's great. You know, the not being able to do J++ because of the lawsuit, it was with both a challenge and an opportunity. It was a challenge in the sense that we kind of went, uh-oh, you know, what do we do? And, you know, short-term was certainly a loss. You know, from an opportunity perspective, it gave us the impetus to do C#. And, you know, I think, you know, every language builds on previous languages and learns lessons from previous languages. And so C# certainly, you know, inherited certain characteristics from Java as a language, as well as, you know, C as a language. And, you know, I think what Anders did with it was just spectacular, where he then took it to the next level. And, you know, I think you can see a lot of the tweaks, as well as a lot of the substantial features that have been added over time, you know, properties, index properties, delegates, lambdas, link in particular, more recently, and even some of the new dynamic functionality that's coming out as part of Visual Studio 2010. Oh, it's so great that we were able to do that, because it really is a much better language than J++ would have been, and it's really allowed us to kind of, I think, bring programming forward in a very clean way. I think one of the things that's happened over the last really 10 years or even 15 years is, you know, the world and software in general has become, I'd say, more dynamic and more, in some ways, complex, in the sense of the number of requirements that people have in terms of what they want to do for their business has just grown astronomically. You know, at one point it was, hey, I just want to have a simple database and I want 4 or 5 guys to be able to enter data in the database. And then you get to a point where you say, well, I want it to be secure. I want it to be able to work over the internet. I want it to be able to work across multiple field offices. You know, I want to integrate with, you know, Outlook, and I want to be able to do email workflow. I want to be able to do decision workflow so that I can have managers be able to, you know, make decisions without having to write code or without having, you know, this is sort of the requirements for a lot of apps, and the expectations of a lot of apps have just increased, you know, astronomically. You know, if you look at an app today, you know, a web app today, you know, whether it's, say, MySpace or Facebook or you know, Twitter or Amazon or, you know, pick your favorite app, you know, a lot of us just take for granted, you know, certain things. You know, security should just work. I should be able to bookmark and come back to that application. I should, you know, be able to make an order and get it delivered the next day. I should be able to find stuff. I should be able to, see relationships between different items. You know, there's a bit of workflow in terms of decision management. You know, just basic stuff that we take for granted as consumers. You know, think back to 10 or 15 years ago. Those were big things. You know, those things didn't exist in the typical apps. You know, most companies, you know, 15 years ago didn't actually have an internet connection at all. They didn't necessarily even have email. And so part of what we tried to do was to figure out, you know, how do we build this kind of cohesive framework that handled a lot of those things. And as part of that, it was also figuring out what are all the different teams around the company that are building, you know, things in different silos, and can we find a way that we can put them together so that when you sit down with .NET, there's a common way of doing things, and there's a common framework that you can find things, and then hopefully there's a common tooling experience so that you can, inside Visual Studio, build a client app, a web service app, a database, you know, and so on, all in one place, and ideally be able to stitch together all these different things within your organizations. I think the biggest opportunity we could have missed was to bring forward kind of our what we had in, say, 97 or 96, and kind of bring it forward so that it would have been competitive today. You know, people often talk about the innovator's dilemma, which is you're very successful, you've got a lot of customers, your sales are good, and yet there's a wave coming that partly because you're successful, partly because you have customers, partly because your sales are good, you don't pay attention to or you miss. And I think that would have been the biggest thing for us in the late 90s was to say, you know, this web thing, maybe it's not really going to pan out. You know, there's not really money in it. Or, you know, hey, this Java language thing, it's cool, but people don't really care about object-oriented concepts. Or, and we see that even today, you know, whether it's, you know, test-driven development or trends like that, where it's very easy to say, well, look, our customers are happy, let's not rock the boat, let's not, you know, add these features. And you know, I think so far we've done a pretty good job in terms of always looking at what are those trends, evaluating them, so you don't constantly chase trends, but, you know, trying to make sure that if we think it's a big wave and it's coming, you know, let's steer the boat in the right direction and let's go after those opportunities as opposed to saying, hey, we're just happy with what we have right now. You know, it's fairly decentralized inside the org when you go after an opportunity. You know, it's no one told me, hey, go build this thing, .NET. You know, often as you need more people, you need to coordinate all these things. But, you know, we try wherever possible to have, you know, individual people in the organization, if they see an opportunity, you know, they raise the flag and say, hey, we should be doing this. And, you know, get a couple people together and you can start making it happen. And that, you know, I think that's kind of a something we've tried to promote, and it's been a key part of our success. You know, as you kind of get bigger and as you try to do bolder things, you know, you need to be able to have, you know, the new college hire straight out of college be able to say, hey, I think we should go do this. And, you know, if you don't have an organization that lets people kind of raise their hand and say, hey, we should go do this, then you have a problem. And, you know, that's one thing I'd say in the overall dev tool space that I think we've been fortunate on. I started writing ASP.NET 7 months out of college. When I wrote the first prototype. And so, you know, it wasn't some big blessed thing that Bill said go do. It was, you know, hey, we have an idea, I have a weekend, let's go make it happen. I mean, for me personally, one of the things I always focus on is kind of what is the end result, you know? And so, you know, one of the things I think I always try to think about is, as I'm building something, is, you know, what does the end-to-end thing look like? What's the final thing look like? What are all the different components of the final thing? And then what are the steps to get to the final thing? How much code do you need to write? You know, how much, you know, framework support's built in to help you? You know, how do you fall into what's called the pit of success as opposed to the pit of failure, meaning that the tools and the framework kind of guide you towards the right thing? And so that's usually what I do, is I literally will write out, you know, what does every line of code look like as I'm starting to design something? What are the steps? And then kind of back off and say, okay, to make that happen, what needs to be built? .NET 1.0 was something we kind of unveiled on the world in June of 2000 at the PDC, and it was either June or July. It was a big surprise to everyone. You know, a lot of people, I think, went to that PDC thinking they were going to hear more of kind of the same old, same old. And, you know, there were definitely a lot of people that were wondering, you know, was Microsoft going to be, continue to be big in the developer tools business or in the developer business? You know, there was lots of excitement around Java, the internet. I mean, that was a lot of skeptics at that time. And it was fun at the PDC to be able to kind of announce during the keynote what we were doing. And no one had a clue it was coming. And, you know, you could almost tell people were like, wow, did they just say this? Did they just say that? And that was one of the highlights for my career, was just watching the audience get into it. And, you know, an hour or two into the keynote going, holy cow. So that was a big highlight. And then we shipped the final release about 18 months later, beginning in 2002. Well, I think with .NET 1, I think you heard a couple of things. One was the early reaction, I'd say, amongst the kind of the early leading edge or bleeding edge was very positive. You know, people were like, wow, you know, I can't believe they did this. And, you know, there's a tremendous amount of kind of excitement and buzz and adoption from people that were looking to build, you know, web apps, or that were looking to kind of push the boundaries in terms of object-oriented, or who lived in kind of a more object-oriented world and just found that much more natural. And so we had a great uptake from the beginning with .NET 1. You know, at the same time, there were people that for whom .NET 1 was, you know, didn't have all the features they still needed. And, you know, there were folks that you know, the transition to a new thing is never super easy. And so, you know, a lot of what we tried to do in 1.1, which was a fairly fast point release, and then especially with .NET 2, you know, was to both keep pushing the platform forward, and then at the same time, make sure that we kind of filled in some of the holes or some of the gaps that we had around productivity for, you know, a certain set of customers that felt like, ooh, you know, moving to .NET's this big thing. I'm not sure I should, you know, I can't do it just this year. And so, you know, a lot of what we did kind of in the following releases was, you know, build on top of the .NET 1 success, but also kind of make sure that we, in some ways, backed up the bus and brought forward the people that didn't make it onto the .NET 1.0 train. And, you know, I think with .NET 2 in particular and VS 2005, we saw another big wave of adoption where we were able to kind of do that. I feel really proud of .NET 1. I mean, it was, you know, anytime you build something new and you have kind of in your mind kind of the vision of where it's going, you know, when you finally get it out, you know, especially a 1.0 product, you know, there's a big sense of accomplishment. Because, you know, again, you know, I think, you know, 1.0 release, people often look at what isn't there, you know, oh, you know, what about this or that, and take for granted a whole bunch of things. Being at the beginning of .NET, where, you know, we couldn't read and write from the file system, where we could allocate memory but not free memory, we could, you know, do addition but not subtraction. You know, it's things that you kind of just take for granted. Of course, you must be able to do that, but, you know, someone had to write code to make all that happen, and, you know, it takes time to do all those things. And so, you know, being at that point where, you know, the system was just sort of at the very beginning to actually seeing it ship in a 1.0 release, you know, is super gratifying. I think the biggest thing I wish we'd done in .NET 1 was focus a little bit more on client deployment and kind of the overall experience for setup and install of the runtime. And I think that was probably, in my mind, when I look back and go, ooh, I wish we'd done that differently. You know, we made a lot of progress since then, certainly with Silverlight. You know, a core part of it was, you know, of Silverlight is the fact that install it in 6 or 7 seconds and it's, you know, a 4 meg download. I wish we'd had that with .NET 1, because I think for client deployment in particular, that would have been huge. So that's probably my biggest, I wish we'd done something differently then. But from a feature set perspective, I felt pretty good. Definitely gaps, but there was enough there that I think, you know, we could build on top of, and the foundation was pretty, ended up being pretty solid. In 2005 was definitely a big release. It was, I think the 2005 and .NET 2 were big releases for a couple of reasons. One was, you know, we did bring forward a ton of people that had not made the transition to VS 2002 or 2003 or .NET. You know, mainly because we helped fill in some of the gaps that existed with some of our frameworks and with some of our tooling stories. And so there was, I think, a big step forward from that perspective. And then obviously in 2005, it also, our whole application lifecycle management suite with VSTS, you know, we brought out for the first time. And, you know, that started to take Visual Studio, you know, into the enterprise even deeper and really start to allow companies and development teams to kind of bridge tester and developer and kind of a whole workflow in terms of how you do, you know, whether from bug item tracking to, you know, work item tracking to a whole bunch of other things in terms of integrating that experience. And so, you know, that was in some ways still a V1 with 2005, but, you know, kind of opened up, I think, .NET into and Visual Studio into a whole bunch of additional spaces and markets. I think the biggest thing in terms of the 2005 release that I wish we'd done differently, personally speaking, was we changed the project file format for web projects in the initial release. And I'd actually gotten decent feedback during the beta, but it turned out to be kind of a pain for people to upgrade. And some people just didn't like the new model. And so one of the things that we did fairly quickly, it was actually even as we were shipping, we actually had a web download, which gave you back the old project format. And then we added it into SP1. And that process was painful for me anyway, in that it required a lot of scrambling to fix. And, you know, it taught us a good lesson in terms of, you know, one is compatibility is important, and making sure we don't ever underestimate that. And then also in terms of, you know, how do we be agile and make sure we respond to customers so that when they do have a problem, you know, let's try to fix it as quickly as possible. And so in the end, it ended up being mostly okay. And it, you know, it was a little bit of a speed bump for a few months, but that would be the one thing I would change in the 2005 and 2.0 release. Other than that, it was pretty good. You know, and we tried to make sure that we, you know, responded to the pain as quickly as possible and addressed it. So, you know, in the end, I think it worked out okay. But yeah, that would be the one thing I would change with that release. You know, when you're trying to evaluate a new feature or a new idea, you know, one of the things that's really important is you get feedback from a lot of people early, and you also make sure that you get feedback from a diverse set of people. And, you know, I think where we've stumbled in the past sometimes is if you have too narrow a group, or, you know, you sell the idea so well and everyone goes, this is the world's greatest idea, without really kind of asking the hard questions or getting them to ask the hard questions or finding the skeptics that say, hey, any new idea is a bad idea, convince me, you know, I'm going to ask all these hard questions. If you don't go through that process, you know, you can sometimes find yourself kind of going down a path that either is very narrow or, you know, isn't going to work for a certain scenario. And so, you know, that's one of the things I always try to push on my teams is, you know, make sure you get a lot of feedback. You know, try to be open and transparent as early as possible with as wide a variety of people as possible. But also make sure that you get lots of focused feedback early from people that will ask hard questions of you. And, you know, that helps make a better product. I think all of us that work on the project, you know, when something doesn't go well, take it personally. You know, we think of this as our baby. And so, you know, if people don't like a feature, then yeah, it's like someone stabbing you. If someone's upset, you know, around quality or because whatever, you didn't ship on a date or it doesn't have this particular thing, you know, it's sort of a slap in the face. So, you know, it definitely, you know, you take it personally, and which is good. I mean, it's both bad because it means you don't sleep, but it's good in the sense of, you know, we're passionate around the product, and hopefully that passion translates into building a better product. I think the 2008 release was a good release in that it was, you know, it sounds bad, but kind of an incremental release in some ways. And I mean that in a good way, not in a bad way. It just kind of made a lot of things better, and it didn't change the world in a fundamental way, and it didn't try to change the world in a fundamental way. It instead said, hey, let's make web apps better, let's make client apps better, let's make the language features better. Let's enable what we call multi-targeting so that you can target not only 2008 projects, but also, you know, target .NET 2, .NET 3, and .NET 3.5. And so, you know, it was the first release to kind of have that idea of multi-targeting, which I think is important for enterprises and big companies and small companies. And so it was I think, a nice release in that it just made a lot of things better and didn't fundamentally change the model on people. So in my mind, that was the biggest thing with the 2008 release was it ended up being a fairly easy upgrade for people to do and to take advantage of a bunch of new features as a result. I think the 2008 release did have a number of pretty fundamental innovations. You know, I think Link in particular from a language perspective and some of the things that we added around Link, whether it's lambdas or extension methods, I think are pretty profound, and are kind of one of the times when that combined with generics in 2005, where we really kind of took the language innovation beyond what some of our competitors had done, and really opened up some interesting new opportunities. And I think you're seeing that today with us, starting to take advantage of those language features in our frameworks. And you're going to see in the .NET 4 and 2010 release even more usage of that. And I think going forward, that's going to be a differentiator where, by having those language features, you can build object models and you can build class frameworks that are a little bit more tuned, that feel a little bit more natural to program to, or a little bit more fluent, and ultimately translate into hopefully developer productivity and make writing code a lot more fun. And I don't mean that in just a I'm building a game kind of way, but I mean specifically in terms of, if you're a developer and you spend most of your day writing code, everything you can do to kind of make the experience more pleasurable and less friction-free or more friction-free, the better. Well, I think the fun thing with the early days of .NET and VS were, the fact that it was such a small group and you knew everyone and, you could fit everyone in one room. I remember the day that we could no longer fit everyone around one table, was a big day. It was like, wow, we need to get a bigger conference room. And, I think that's the fun thing when you're in the beginning days where, you can often look back, fondly and forget all the bad stuff, but say, wow, I knew every line of code that got checked into the product, and I wrote a lot of the lines of code that got checked into the product. Now the project's bigger, there's a lot more people working on it. So sometimes you miss the intimacy of I know everyone's code by sight. At the same time, the nice thing about having a little bit more of a mature product and having more people is you can actually do much more stuff. And so the end result with each release gets bigger and, hopefully better in substantial ways. And so, there's definitely a positive to having a more mature product now. It's always fun to look back and say, oh, I remember when we debated how exceptions would work, look how it turned out. I'm trying to remember how many times we changed the collection interfaces. I lost track after about 12 or 14 times. You remember some of those days with fondness. The thing that I think with developer tools and developer platforms in general, a really good one, enables a developer or an organization or a company to kind of build something great that people haven't seen before and hopefully do it, productively and fast and quick. And, I think when you look at, how organizations and IT has evolved over the last 10 or 15 years, you look at how the internet's evolved, you look at software in general, it's radically different now than it was 15 years ago. We often, because it moves every year quite a bit, you often lose track of just how seismic the changes have been, pre-internet, post-internet, pre-connected system, post-connected systems. I think for Visual Studio, hopefully the seed of its success and then, both now and going forward is, if we can enable developers or organizations to be more successful building apps, whether they're web apps, whether they're client apps, whether they're mobile apps, and then more importantly, how they all connect together, that ends up unlocking just a ton of potential, whether it's, again, you're launching the next startup or whether you're, trying to integrate your CRM system internally within your enterprise or within your organization. If you can make that app 10% better, that can translate into billions of dollars of savings, around the world. And so, that to me is the big potential of Visual Studio is, how do we keep making it better? How do we make people more successful? How do we enable developers to do more? And I think there's a lot, I think we've done a lot of good stuff. There's a lot more that we can do. One of the things that we're trying to do with Silverlight, kind of like we did with .NET 1.0 in the early days, where we saw a wave of progress and innovation coming with the web and with the browser and with web-based deployment and software as a service. What we're trying to do with Silverlight is, okay, how do we take .NET, how do we take Visual Studio, and how do we enable people to build apps inside the browser, that go beyond what you can do today, whether with media experiences, whether it's with rich internet applications that integrate graphics and data and programmability, whether it's line of business apps, and be able to do it both on the PC as well as on things like devices with mobile, as well as, you know, make sure we think hard about, you know, running, you know, around the internet on different types of systems, both inside and outside the browser. And, you know, hopefully with Silverlight, what we're going to enable is the people that already know .NET, that already know C# and VB, that are already comfortable with Visual Studio, to kind of go even further in terms of their solutions and leverage all those same skills, the same tools, the same APIs, and build even better applications. So I'm pretty excited about Silverlight too.